I'd like to invite forward Amy Reynolds to come and join me up here for a dialogue. Amy is the director at the director of programs at SHARE. Go ahead and have a seat there. And I must say, Amy, it wasn't until this past week when I looked up SHARE's website and met with you for coffee that I had any idea of how much SHARE does. Our church has some familiarity with SHARE. From over the years, we have a group here that every month goes and serves food at the SHARE house. And we participate in the homeless shelters. And this month, of course, our monthly mission offering is going to the backpack program. But I saw that you guys do a lot more than that. And when I realized just the full extent of everything that you do, it occurred to me that SHARE is like the modern-day reincarnation of the early Christian community that we just read about in Acts. Because what you've got here, you've got people from all walks of life that break bread together. Then you've got the pooling of resources and the distributing of those resources to people most in need. And then along the way, you've got people doing the everyday miracles of loving each other and being of service to each other, what our scripture calls signs and wonders. And so you've got all of these things. And so I think it's truly a reincarnation of the early Christian community. And so I'm wondering if maybe we can just begin with you giving us an overview of all the things that SHARE does.
It's a beautiful analogy. So SHARE, yes, a lot of people, when they think about SHARE House, which it sounds like that's where a lot of people come. SHARE House is our men's facility. We have 30 guys that live there for up to 60 days. And during that time, we try and figure out what led them to homelessness and what it is that we can do to help. And then we also have another 13 guys who live upstairs who are with us for up to 2 years and help make that place run. So our guys help us do all of the cooking and the cleaning, and they run the front office. And out of the basement of that building, we serve meals to the community. We serve about 90,000 meals a year with one paid staff and then a wonderful supportive community that helps to make that happen for us. And then we have two family shelters, one here in Hazeldale and one over in Orchards. They have 11 rooms for families and one room each for single women. Four ladies, never met, share a room. It's always very exciting. And our family shelters generally have about 45 people or so, with anywhere between 11 and 22 kids. So it's not uncommon for the kids to outnumber the adults. Little kids love shelter. There's lots to do, lots of children to talk to. There's a playroom in each. Teenagers hate shelter. There's lots of kids. It's boring. There's a playroom. And there's one phone and there's one TV. And if you've ever tried to get people to agree on TV in your house, it's just the same when there's a lot more people there. So we have that. We operate a supported housing program because 60 days in shelter is really not sufficient to be able to move out successfully. So we have a supported housing program where people put 30% of their income towards the rent, and then the program covers the rest. And we could do that on a short term if people just need a little bit of help, and we can do that for up to 2 years if people really are struggling and need some more support. So we serve about 120 households a month through that program. And then we have an individual development account program, which is where we try to help low-income people gain financial assets. So people can save up to $2,000, and they have about 2 years to do that. And they could save for a house or going back to school or starting a small business. And they take some financial education classes. They save there up to $2,000, and then we'll match that with an additional $4,000 to help give them a start on ending generational poverty if people wish to buy a house or getting a fresh start going forward. And a 200% return on your money is really a lot better than just about anything else you could get. So we operate that. We have an outreach program where we literally go out in the streets and try to connect people with housing and other services. So we do that to the community. And then during the winter months, from November through March, we partner with the faith-based community and the Council for the Homeless to operate the winter hospitality overflow shelters, one there at St. Andrews, and then the one that you all are going to down at St. Paul's. That's 24 guys who are there on mats on the floor, and it really does help you appreciate what you have, and especially when it's very cold. So we do all of that, and then we also have children's programs. So we, during the summer, operate a summer lunch program. So we get funding from the state and then private dollars to help provide meals so that we partner with academic programs. For the past several years, we've done about 9,000 meals a summer. And then last year, when Parks and Rec was experiencing a funding crisis, they asked a nonprofit to step forward and do that. So we figured that should be us. And so last year, we served about 27,000 meals over the summer to hungry kids. And then we have the backpack program. So the backpack program started in about 2004. We had a staff member who was also on the board for the Evergreen School District, and he was very concerned about what happened to the kids that are on the free and reduced lunch program over the course of the weekend. This is when they're not getting food, and children who are hungry struggle with being able to concentrate in school. They have behavioral issues, and children living in poverty often move in and out of school, and so they miss a lot. So the concern was around hunger. And so we worked with three schools, and we gave them each 25 packs, which at the time was literally a backpack of food, and that was like spaghetti sauce, spaghetti, a loaf of bread, tuna fish, peanut butter, just the basics to get somebody through the weekend. And the concern with the actual literal backpack is that if you're six and you have your own books over one shoulder and then a bag of food over the other, it's really very identifying and strange and cumbersome to be able to do. So we moved on to plastic bags, and that worked for a while, and then Vancouver was looking at getting rid of plastic bags, so now we use reusable bags, but we've never changed the name of the program because the reusable bag program just isn't very cute. So we do that, and with the economic crisis over the past few years, that program has really grown from the 75 packs that were in three schools to we're now in 72 schools, and we give out over 1,500 packs a week. So it's been really different, where people who never imagined that they would be a family who would need a pack of food do, and the schools do that process for us, so we never actually meet the kids. The school identifies which of their kids they feel are in danger of going hungry. Sometimes that's the same kids every week, and sometimes they spread their packs around so that it affects different kids. We have schools like the School for the Blind. We give them literally one pack, but it's one pack to go to a child who is both hungry and blind. And then we have schools that get 75 packs and have 90% of their kids on the free and reduced lunch program. So there's just a large range in our community of need.
Well, thanks for giving that overview. Now, and I was thinking, if Cher is the modern-day reincarnation of the early Christian community, which I think you just made a very compelling case for that, I think that means that you're the modern reincarnation of Peter. Has anybody ever told you that? Nobody's ever flattered you with that. Okay. Well, but, you know, I'm sitting here thinking that I think it's really very true, because Peter was sort of a leader to the leaders, and as I understand it, you supervise the supervisors of all those many programs you just mentioned. And then as well, Peter was involved in that pooling of resources, and you told me that you wrote half of the grant, you do half of the grant writing for Cher. And then you're also the preacher of good news for Cher, right? She's the one who comes to places like our church and shares the good news of what Cher is doing. Now, if you read a little bit earlier before our passage today, Peter actually gives a sermon. But he not only preaches the good news, but he also addresses some bad news. It's pretty bad news, is the crucifixion. So I'm wondering, we want you to share some good news today, and you've already shared some good news, but could you first address some bad news by just giving us a portrait of what hunger and child hunger are like in Clark County? What are the causes? What does it look like? Are we going to see emaciated kids laying on the ground on Highway 99? What does it look like in Clark County?
Sure. You know, there was a person who was speaking earlier about hunger in Africa, and I think that people have all seen the pictures of what hunger in Africa look like, with ribs being shown and emaciated bellies and children starving in the streets. And obviously that isn't the way we experience hunger here in Clark County. But children are indeed hungry. And in America, we see hunger where it looks like obesity. and issues around weight, diabetes, asthma, and this can all be related to health and specifically to hunger. So in our kids, the food that is cheapest is processed and prepared and has high salt content, high sugar content, hence why we see it more in obesity. And we see it a lot in the shelters with younger and younger kids who are diabetic and needing those services. And the way that hunger affects the children is, as I said, in school it can make it so that it's difficult for children to concentrate, difficult for them to learn. They can lose a lot, and then it looks like behavioral issues. So sometimes they end up in remedial classes where the issue really is lack of food. And that's something that our hunger programs help to address.
So you've given us a little bit of a picture of the bad news. Now, tell us some more about the good news. Have you been able to see some positive effects, some results? Has there been any documentation of what the backpack program has done for the children? Are you seeing some good news there?
Yes, we do have good news. So our backpack program, which is a program that we absolutely love and we found it really resonates with people when you talk about doing something to address child hunger that hits people in their hearts, they really want to be a part of it. So we've had this program for a few years and we've always felt that it made us feel good and we really enjoy doing it. And we get about 50 volunteers a week who also enjoy doing it. But we were concerned that in the grand scheme of hunger, is this really addressing this need for the children? And so public health, we approached them to ask them if they could help us. They do a lot of evaluations when we were hoping they could help us with this process of evaluating the program. And they actually offered to do it for us for free, which is our very favorite price. So they did that for us. And they did a comprehensive approach where they surveyed the teachers and the parents and sent messages home to try and figure out, is this program effective? And they looked nationally at these programs, which when we started this program, we thought we were geniuses and this was our idea, but there are about 2,000 of these programs across the nation, so there are many geniuses here, which was thrilling. But the program they found helped the children at home, that the parents reported that they were able to concentrate more. The program would help to gather around family dinners because the food was often shared, not just with this particular child, but with the whole rest of the family. The teachers reported that the children were learning better, had less behavioral issues if they were on the program. And then unexpectedly, that the program helped to connect these particular students to the school. So these students were often folks that the teachers had a difficult time building a relationship with the parents, and this helped to build trust, and it gave them one more connection. So it really helped to add that bond, which we were thrilled to hear.
Well, that's very encouraging good news, and I'm glad we have the opportunity at this church to help support that with our monthly mission offering. But I also get the sense that there's more that could be done and that more that needs to be done. And I wonder about that at the level, I guess, of public policy, because it wasn't until I did some research on child hunger in the state of Washington, I was just really struck by the sheer numbers that we're dealing with, that every year 3 million kids in the state of Washington are beneficiaries of emergency food banks and the money that our state gives to those food banks. And so I thought, that's a lot of kids, and that's a lot more mac and cheese dinners than churches can provide. And so I'm wondering how Cher views kind of the big picture and the approach that Cher has to that kind of that big picture.
Well, we absolutely believe in advocacy, and it's so amazing that you guys are going up to Olympia to advocate for this. We believe in that. We do that. I've been twice in the past week and a half up to Olympia, once to talk about asset building for low-income people and to encourage the legislature to reinvest in that. And then once last week to talk about housing advocacy for low-income people. That seems like every biennium recently that the state is experiencing yet another crisis. And of course, this year is no exception. And yet there are 27,000 homeless kids in the state of Washington, and many things are important, including K through 12 education, but if these kids don't have a place to live, then being educated isn't going to help them on a daily basis. It's a full package experience, and we believe in that, and we do actively advocate for that.
Well, one of the things our scripture talks about is how one of the results of sharing in the community was not just the tangible results of people having food, but also a spiritual result in that people had glad and generous hearts as a result of what they were doing. And so you had shared with me this past week a story of someone who experienced having a glad and generous heart, I think involved in Duplex. I was wondering if you could share that story with our congregation.
Absolutely. So we have a lot of amazing donors and people who feel passionately about solving the problem of homelessness and hunger in our community. And we have one particular donor who's been wanting to do something for a long time, something on a larger scale, something that would have a lasting impression. And so this past fall, it was a couple, they decided that what they wanted to do was to buy a duplex that would be for families, a permanent place for people to live. So they gave us a very generous gift of $160,000, and we were able to get some funding from the county to balance that. So for about $300,000, we bought a brand new duplex, and it's each side of the duplex is 1,500 square feet, and they're 2 3-bedroom units. And just before Thanksgiving, we were able to move our first family in. Was a mother with 3 teenage girls who was escaping a domestic violence situation. And this was her very first affordable house that was all brand new. And when she and her girls went in, they literally got down their knees and cried that it was so beautiful and it was really a gift for their family. The donor had also set up a Thanksgiving dinner for them, complete with pumpkin pie, so it was all ready to go. It was an amazing offer.
Well, thanks for sharing with us all that good news, and we're really glad to be having the opportunity to partner with you and share this upcoming week in doing the mac and cheese dinner, and so we hope we can do our best to advocate for programs that will help share. So let's give Amy a round of applause for joining with us.